Unrooted is a podcast by the Indigenous Foundation, focused on centering Indigenous voices and stories. Through Unrooted, we hope to dismantle systems of oppression and uproot the deeply ingrained issues and racism that exist against Indigenous peoples to this day. We hope to share intersectional, holistic perspectives through our discussions with Indigenous and Afro-Indigenous advocates and changemakers. Hello, Bajau, everyone. My name is Katie. I'm a citizen of the Potawatomi Nation, a rising sophomore college student, and a member of the projects and podcast teams here at the Indigenous Foundation.
Ayuki, hey, hey, how? My name is Chloe. I am a part Indigenous senior in high school and a member of the projects, podcasts, and the social media / design team here at the Indigenous Foundation.
Hello, Bajau. My name is Casey. I'm a member of Kettle and Stony Point First Nation in Ontario and currently finishing up college. I'm also a member of the projects and podcast teams here at TIFF.
On this episode of Unrooted, we wanted to talk about the status of Indigenous people in higher education and how to go about navigating a colonial education system as Indigenous peoples.
So, as a senior in high school and with two college students currently, I just wanted to go and ask, how is college going for you guys so far? Are you there yet, or are you about to go in a few weeks?
Yeah, so I am going into my sophomore year of college, and I'm moving into college. I'm moving into my dorm next week for the first time, so that's going to be really interesting. I spent my entire freshman year of college online because of the COVID-19 pandemic, so that was definitely, like, a really interesting experience that I never really expected to go through. Especially like having my senior year of high school get kind of cut off in March and then not really going to school in person since literally March of 2020. So it's going to be really interesting going back in person, but I'm really excited to meet my friends and experience college in person in the next few weeks.
So just out of your personal experiences alone, do you see a lot of Native people in your schools? Do you witness a lot of Native representation in your areas?
At my high school and elementary school, I wasn't aware of any other Indigenous students. And as far as I know, I was the only one because of our rural area, I guess. But yeah, we never really had any special services or resources directed for Indigenous people as well.
Yeah, and in my area, and I think along the East Coast in general, there's kind of less Native people compared to on the West Coast. But growing up and in my elementary school and my middle school, kind of similar to Casey, I was the only Indigenous student that I knew of, but that doesn't mean that there were more that I didn't know of. And currently, like in my university, it's a very large university and it's very diverse. But from my understanding, there's a very small Native population. So we don't really have a lot of Native representations in terms of Native people in leadership positions throughout the university, whether that be in student organizations or in student government or even in faculty. We currently only have one Native faculty member in our entire university. So it's definitely something that we're going to try and work on in the future.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. You're from New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Statistically, 19% of 18 to 24-year-old Native Americans are enrolled in college compared to 41% of the overall U.S. population.
Wow. Yeah, and it's really interesting because Native Americans comprise only 1% of the United States undergraduate population and less than 1% of the graduate population. But something that a lot of people don't know is that Indigenous students are often left out of post-secondary research because they're such a small sample size. So a lot of people choose not to do research on the amount of Indigenous people that are in higher education because it's such a small percentage of our overall population of U.S. undergraduate students.
I think it's definitely very interesting how we are so often left out, especially during a time when everyone is so focused on moving forward and making things better, but we're continually not involved in those kinds of movements to make those kinds of changes in schools. I mean, based on data from 20% of Native American students received grant aid in comparison to all of students, where the average was 77%. I think there's just a lot of additional barriers that we're going through, or just generally speaking, our group of people is going through, that are often not talked about. And I think it's almost crazy that they wouldn't be talking about this more.
It's really interesting because we really have a lack of resources that are available to Indigenous students in terms of finding aid for college, finding financial aid, help with college applications. And, you know, the national poverty rate for Native American people is 31% in comparison to Caucasian or white people, which is 9.1%. So you can really tell not only from these statistics, but also from different personal experiences shared across what's currently known as the United States and Canada, that Native people and Indigenous people in general are really lacking in terms of the help that they get when applying to college and other institutions of higher education.
And on top of that, in America, only 1 in 5 Native students live with a parent who has a bachelor's degree or higher. And I think when there's not that kind of like life experience available to you that you can have help with, it feels like harder. And it feels harder to actually make the steps to be the first person in your family to go to college, especially in comparison to white people who have 52% of their parents going to pursue secondary education.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the other students, Indigenous students that I talk to as well, say, I'm the first person to graduate college in my family. I'm the first person to graduate high school. And it's really hard to have that pressure on you as well as an already Indigenous student with all the other pressures that come along with that. And then that statistic of 1 in 5 Indigenous students living with a parent who had a bachelor's degree or higher, you almost feel that pressure. I'm the first one in my family. And then when you can't get that funding to be the first person in your family, that is even harder as well.
And furthermore, there's just, I guess, different lifestyles, because there's, you know, if you grew up with a parent who didn't go to college, but, you know, they're making it, they're okay, then maybe you'll feel like, I don't need that. I don't need to pursue that. And that's a whole other topic. But I think we're not as connected as a group of people to, or, you know, expected to go to university as other groups of people maybe are. And I think that's a whole nother challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of the times, you know, we talk about resilience as Native people. And I think, if anything, the sheer amount of first-generation college students, university students, and graduate students that we have that are successfully completing their degrees is just a testament to that, because of how many barriers these Native students are facing, yet they're still overcoming these obstacles and achieving a graduate degree or an undergraduate degree. And like I said, I think that's really just a testament to how resilient we are as Native people, despite whatever barriers that we come across. So, Casey, did you want to talk a little bit about your experiences at universities in Canada?
Yeah, for sure. So I know in the States, it's more university that people go to, if I'm correct.
Yeah. Yes.
In here, it's kind of a mix between college and university. I'm pretty sure in terms of like applying for funding, pretty similar in terms of Indigenous representation at the colleges around and universities around me. But personally, if I wanted to talk about like the funding aspect for me to college, no one ever really told me that I could get funding to go. There wasn't like my high school, how they advertise all these different grants and bursaries, like apply if you're Indigenous, apply for funding. There was none of that push or push, I don't know the other word, but like no push for me to apply and go to college. I only found out about it from my family, because my mom also was funded through the same sponsor I'm funded through. But I was really lucky because a lot of people in Ontario and even from my reserve didn't get funding. Either there's not enough funding, they're not high enough priority.
So just so we can hear about what it's like a Native student in college in the U.S., Katie, would you like to share your experiences?
Yeah, so I think that my perspective is kind of unique in that my university, like I mentioned before, is highly diverse. There are so many different people from all different walks of life, from all different places of socioeconomic status. So it's a really great community in that sense. But also we have such a comparatively low Indigenous population that it's definitely difficult to navigate because, you know, you're surrounded by a lot of other students who still celebrate Thanksgiving and other settler colonial holidays, and it's kind of difficult to be in that environment because you're kind of sitting in a space that's not built for you. And I think that's one of the hardest things that I had to grasp going into college. Like, I am in a colonial institution. This place was not built for me, and it's like I said, it's definitely difficult to kind of grasp that concept because, like I said, you're in a space that wasn't built for you and you're trying to get an education. And for a lot of Indigenous people, including me, use that education to go back into your community and to serve your community. And like I said, it's definitely a difficult thing to grasp. And I know for a lot of universities, they do have land acknowledgements, but after that land acknowledgement, their relationship with the Indigenous tribes pretty much stops there. And it's really important for these colonial institutions to understand what it means to go beyond land acknowledgement, because you really need to make meaningful connections with the tribes that inhabit the land and learn from them. You know, these Indigenous tribes have had stewardship of the land for many, many generations, and there's so much valuable knowledge that they have. And I think that it's just so important for these universities to realize, like, what can I do beyond just acknowledging that I live on Native land? What can I do to make connections with these tribes and really integrate that into university life? Because just saying that you live on Native land is definitely a stepping stone, is definitely a starting point, but it really can't stop there. And that's definitely like part of the change that I want to make in my university, because, you know, my university was built on Native land, and it's really important that we acknowledge that and then move beyond that and say, what can we do to make these connections with the different tribes? And I know, especially during this time, kind of going into the fall and back to school and college application season, especially for Indigenous students, it can be really, really stressful. And I think all of us have been through this college application process. So Chloe, did you want to talk a little bit more about that and kind of how you're navigating that right now?
Oh. Absolutely. Last year, I was touring a school. It was online. It was like a Zoom. But they started off land acknowledgement to the people who were currently living there. It was really exciting. First time I had ever seen a school, including my own and the ones in my area, acknowledge that they were on Native land. So at first I was really excited. This was a massive school, like 50,000 people. I was just so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, maybe there's a union. And so I asked. And the people who were running the Zoom call said, oh no, there isn't actually. but you can join Asian Student Union. They let people in. And I was taken aback at that because it's 50,000 students. I mean, shouldn't there be at least the Native people there, or at least several that would like to have their own group and have their own independence? So that was the interesting way to kind of start off this college experience. I'm very fortunate enough to go to a pretty academically competitive high school where I have had access to resources to help with applying for colleges. And for that, I am extremely grateful. I'm also grateful I am also grateful for my former history teacher who made a point to cover affirmative action in relation to critical race theory, something that teachers in the are not required to do. For any of you who do not know, affirmative action consists of a number of policies, programs, and procedures put in place to remedy the effects of longstanding discrimination against primarily Black and Indigenous people of color and women. This includes taking into account the struggles of certain minority groups in university applications. But some colleges emphasize it more than others. Throughout my high school experience, especially now as a senior applying to university, I've been in many, many, many non-university related discussions with my classmates and even teachers, like people who are supposed to be supporting me, who find out that I'm Native, and their first reaction is to say something such as, "You're so lucky you don't have to work hard to get into college," or "Must be nice to play the Native card and not get into any university that you want." Or sorry, "Must be nice to play the Native card and get into any university that you want." While the comments themselves mean nothing to me, the hostility of it all is, honestly, a bit unsettling. Even after learning about affirmative action in the classroom, I've heard several of my peers say outright that Indigenous and Black minorities are undeserving of any benefit in university applications, that maybe we just don't work hard enough. Maybe my peers don't understand the level of privilege and academic advantage that we've grown up with, having free tutors and countless AP classes and having state-of-the-art microscopes for labs and, you know, just all these blessings and additional academic gifts that other schools and other people don't have. And maybe that's why they say these things. Part of me worries that my peers do mean what they say, and that they believe all these negative stereotypes about us, and that if we do have success, like, they'll try and take it away from us. I mean, I shouldn't have to say Native Americans have worked just as hard to get into university as anyone else, and many have had to jump through additional hoops to even graduate. For any other Indigenous students out there listening, do not let others' assumptions and insecurities take away from all that you have accomplished. We all should be proud. Everyone, not just us. We all should be proud of making it into university and be so excited for the better opportunities and life outcomes that higher education can provide us.
So we also wanted to talk about how to navigate a colonial education system, because you kind of ask yourself this question, like, how do you as a Native person navigate a university that was designed to resist you? And I think that we're all kind of trying to answer this question, especially those of us that are currently in university or in college. And I think the biggest thing for me that comes to mind is finding a community and really finding your group of people or a smaller group of people within your university. I know for me, I am involved in a lot of different student organizations, but particularly two that helped me tremendously. One of them was called SACNAS, which is the Society for the Advancement of Chicanos, Hispanics, and Native Americans in Science. And we have a really large graduate chapter at my university. So really finding that community and finding resources and having other people to mentor me through my freshman year of college was something that really was insanely helpful for me, especially going into college in a virtual format. I didn't know what to expect. Like, no one has ever really done this before. And having the people who have gone through the same experiences that I have to kind of mentor me and guide me through the process was really invaluable for me. And I really think that without that, I definitely wouldn't have been as successful as I was this past year. And I think also something that really helped me was my Native American Cultural Association on campus. Although we are small, we are very mighty. And I think that just having that space to go and rant whenever I needed to about my classmates that were celebrating Thanksgiving, or if I just wanted to go on Zoom and just bead with friends, it was just really a great community that I had. And I think, like I said, that really got me through my first year of college, especially in this virtual format because of the coronavirus. But I don't know if you guys also wanted to talk about kind of different ways that you've found your community in your colonial institutions.
Mm-hmm. So I definitely agree with you, Katie, about the relationships in the community, because for Indigenous people, that the relationships and community is a huge thing. One of the biggest values, I guess, I kind of try to go by. Your community is very important. But we have a First Nations center at my college, and my whole first year, I actually never stepped foot in the First Nations Center. And now 2 years later, I'm working with them. So a lot of other Indigenous students from my college also did not use the First Nations Center. And just to have that in a colonial education institution, I think is a good step. So having that First Nations Center and using it, I think would have been really beneficial for me in my first year of college. But the second year I was virtual, and they actually reached out to me and asked if I wanted to work with them. And they offered me and other students some work because of the hardships COVID caused. Finding my community through the First Nations Center, I think, kind of took a turn in my education at the college I went to, because I definitely started to get more involved. I started interacting with my teachers through Zoom more. But yeah, with the First Nations Center at my college, we are also always trying to answer the question of how do you navigate a university that was designed to resist you? And then how do you work within that with Indigenous people? How do you improve their experience and make sure they have those tools? I think that's a big thing. You need to utilize whatever is there for you. Utilize it, because that's what I learned.
So I'm still in high school. And if you haven't picked up already, there's very, very other people at my school who identify as Native American or part Native American, like just generally at all. And so that is definitely an experience. And I don't really think I have necessarily a community here at school or pretty much in my area. And I think for a lot of my life, because I felt like, oh, I'm missing out on so many things. I could have, you know, First Nations or Native American friends, or just more of them, generally speaking. And I could be in, you know, places where I could learn about my culture with other people and share my culture with other people who also understand what I'm talking about, and to understand those traditions too. But I didn't get that opportunity. And I think something that really changed for me over this pandemic was I stopped going from thinking I'm so alone to thinking I'm gonna make us known to this community that I live in. I'm going to remind people every day that we exist here and that we exist everywhere. And that, you know, they can't say things in the classroom that are, you know, offensive, or they can't act ignorant about, you know, traumatic stuff residential schools, because you never know, there might be an Indigenous person in the classroom whose own grandparents suffered in those schools. I think generally speaking, that's the mentality that I have, at least for now, until I'm in a situation where I have more of a community. I think that's kind of, I think that's a good way to go about being who you are in a place where there isn't really any space for you.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely something that I've had to navigate this year. As someone who is currently and consistently reconnecting with my indigeneity and my tribal community, I think that as soon as I was able to become comfortable with myself, I had the courage to stand up for not only myself, but for my community and be in those places where, you know, you feel uncomfortable, but you have the courage to step up and say, you know, this isn't right. Like, you can't just, you know, like you said, make those ignorant comments. And, you know, I think words have so much power, especially in Indigenous communities. And, you know, especially when you're coming from a place of ignorance, it hurts to hear people say things that are so ignorant. And I think it's just really difficult, especially like we were saying, when you're in a university that was not designed for you, it's even more difficult because you have all these other forces that are kind of acting against you. But like I said, once I was really able to be comfortable in myself, I was really able to get the courage to stand up for not only myself, but my community and the other Indigenous people around me. I also wanted to talk quickly about a book that's like my favorite book ever. Ooh. Probably everyone on like the Indigenous Foundation team and also my friend group can tell all of our listeners how much I talk about this book because I bring it up every chance I can get. I do want to shout out the College Horizons program and Dr. Adrienne Keene for introducing me to this book. For those of you that don't know, College Horizons is a pre-college program for Native American, Native Hawaiian, and Alaska Native high school students open to current sophomores and juniors. So each summer, students work with college counselors and college admissions officers in a 5-day crash course on college applications. So if any of you are currently going into the college application process, you're able to apply this summer to go to the College Horizons program. It's insanely amazing. It really helped me find myself, and I can't recommend it enough. So to talk about this book, it's called A Third University is Possible. And basically the premise of this book is how you can take these useful tools from your colonial education, whether that be college, university, high school, and using those tools for decolonial purposes. And the author, Law Paperson, talks about a whole bunch of different things in the book, but I wanted to read this quote because I think it's one of the most powerful kind of quotes that they have in the book. And it says, "Attach a pacemaker to the heart of those machines you hate. Make it pump for your decolonizing enterprise. Let it tick its own countdown. Ask how and how otherwise of colonizing machines, even when they are dangerous." And I think this is so important because it really brings up the idea of understanding how colonial machines work, how colonial universities work, and how we can be in colonial universities and use those tools and the information that we get for decolonial purposes. How can we take all this information and bring it back to our communities and help our communities and build up our communities and stand with our communities? And I think when I was reading this book as someone who is just starting my freshman year of college in a colonial university, it gives you a lot of perspective of what you're kind of getting yourself into. And I feel like it's really empowering because especially if you're in a university that wasn't designed for you, it can feel very daunting to kind of be in that space, but to know that you have the power and you have the courage to take this information that you have and use it for good in your community is something that I really needed and that I think that is really useful for other Indigenous people in general just to use, and specifically if you're just going into college. So I definitely recommend the book. Please if you're interested, read it. It's the best book ever.
That sounds amazing. I will definitely maybe consider taking a good look at that book.
Me as well. Was...
all right. So I think if I could sum up this podcast here, I really think the main point is that we need more Indigenous people in education. There's a ton of challenges for so many people. But no matter what challenges or roadblocks we are facing on our journeys, we can't let them stop us.
I watched a video researching for this podcast, and I came across a very interesting statistic that I feel like a lot of people don't realize. So in Canada, around 44% of the Indigenous population is actually under the age of 25. So a lot of us are youths, and we are in school right now, and we're in high school and university right now, and the kids in university and college and the majority of the Indigenous population is going to be your future co-workers, your future students, doctors. So we really should care about the Indigenous experience in college and university and giving people the right resources to achieve their purpose, I guess you could say.
You're still right about what you're saying. And I think if we take a look at this from a mathematical perspective, if we're half the population or nearly half the population is under the age of 25, in 30 years, when we all grow up and have children of our own, the population is only going to be bigger. We're only going to be a more noticeable minority. So if we're being forgotten, if we're being constantly pushed to the side for other people, then of us, when we are visible in 30 years, how bad are these problems going to be? It's crucial that we start right now trying to make university and college and high school and every part of our society a better place for Native children and for Native adults.
There is a billboard that was created by an Indigenous artist. His name is Greg Deal, and it says a really simple phrase, but I think that it has so much power. It says, "There are Indigenous people in the future." And I think, you know, there are Indigenous doctors in the future. There are Indigenous engineers, Indigenous artists, Indigenous musicians in the future. And that phrase and all that it stands for is just completely empowering to all of us as Indigenous people. And if there is any advice that I could give anyone who's currently in university, in college, in high school, you have the power to shape a decolonial future for Indigenous people, and you can't let anyone stop you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Unrooted. We hope you were able to learn more about Indigenous representations in higher education and the importance of being resilient no matter what challenges you face on your educational journey. If you want to learn more about some of the topics we discussed today, make sure to check the description for links and resources.